Millions of people reside in underdeveloped neighborhoods called colonias on both sides of the U.S.-Mexican border. Although some initiatives are underway to meet the housing and infrastructure needs of these communities, the demand for basic services is still a burning issue. Kent Patterson recently traveled to the borderlands and files this report.
Architect Jesus Gamiz drives his car through the rough-and-tumble hillside neighborhoods of Ciudad Juarez, Mexico. Exploding in population, from 300,000 people in 1970 to more than 1 million today, Juarez attracted new migrants drawn by the hundreds of maquiladora export assembly plants in the city. But many arrived, only to encounter no housing or utility services. Building up improvised neighborhoods called colonias, the new residents went to work constructing their own homes. Gami says economic and cultural factors led to a shift back in the 1970s, away from traditional adobe houses to ones made out of concrete block. Gami says this new construction style presents problems in a climate like Juarez's, where extremes in temperatures often predominate, and where many people don't have air conditioning or natural gas connections built into their homes.
When it's hot outside or inside the home, the concrete block heats up and causes the house to be hot in the summer or inversely cold in the winter. And this causes people to spend more on gas and electricity so they can have a comfortable environment.
To keep cool, people purchase portable fans. To stay warm and cook, they use propane gas tanks, which are sometimes unsafe and explode. Some colonia residents still lack running water and sewers. The spread of colonias in Juarez grows out of a housing deficit, currently estimated to be from 60 to 80,000 units. Across the river from Juarez is El Paso, Texas, another place where the lack of affordable housing has encouraged the formation of colonias. An estimated 80,000 people currently live in colonias in El Paso County. Across Texas, there may be more than 600,000 people living in colonias. First settled in the 1950s, the predominantly Mexican-American community of Sparks became the model of U.S. colonias. Even though fancy site-built homes are intermingled with rundown dwellings and trailers, two-thirds of Sparks' 900 or so families live below the poverty level. On a steep hill above Sparks, Guadalupe Ortega talks in the living room of her family's old mobile home and self-built extension. After her husband left, Ortega says she and her children lived for many years without basic furnishings.
When people finally came to help me, I didn't have any gas. I didn't have a heater, and the room had a lot of holes in it. It didn't have anything. Me and my girls were freezing.
Well, it's very unfortunately, you know, as the richest country in the world, we're out fighting wars and providing more services, food, you know, to different areas, out of Africa, what like that, to be a competitive, you know, world power. But then, of course, one thing that we're not doing is actually looking in our own backyard meaning the Texas-Mexico border.
Frank DeSalas directs the Sparks Housing Development Corporation, a nonprofit organization that helps neighbors like Guadalupe Ortega improve their home construction.
You know, we have people that come over here and they say, wow, is this Mexico or is this a third world country? No, this is the United States, but we are living in third world living conditions. You know, but like I said, you know, we should work with different government entities to actually combat this problem.
Nowadays, colonias on both sides of the border are prominent features of one of the world's fastest growing regions.
Let me just say that in both cases, what we're seeing here is essentially a rational response from low-income people to the lack of a housing policy, to rapid urbanization often.
Dr. Peter Ward is a centennial chair in the LBJ School of Public Affairs at the University of Texas, Austin. Ward has studied and written about colonias in both Mexico and the United States.
throughout Latin America and in Mexico, we're talking about a process of self-build. People will occupy their lots, they'll put a shack on there, and then they'll gradually, over a period of 10 or 15 years, they will improve that shack, substituting the shack for one, two, three, four-room brick-built dwellings, gradually would put a, perhaaps a second story on there, put a concrete roof on. Clearly, you'd have to do that if you're going to build upwards. At the household level, through what's called self-help. And at the community level, we'd be lobbying officials to put in basic services. Now, in the United States, it's very, very different. There is some level of politicking of local officials, but that's really very weak because local officials don't usually have the resources to put in terms of county officials. But in terms of the actual, the sort of house that you put on your lot, it's very, very different. One finds a modest amount of self-help, particularly among original Mexican migrants who've done that or their parents did that back home. But more usually what you find is that people will put a trailer on their lot and aspire to upgrading or substituting that trailer for a manufactured home.
There's some similarities in the sense that the people you're dealing with are, they're trying to make the best of a tough situation. I mean, they're very, very strong-willed, very capable, very very proud people.
Scott Stormont is a senior program development officer with the North American Development Bank, NADBANK, a bilateral institution set up in 1994 by the North American Free Trade Agreement to fund infrastructure improvement projects along the U.S.-Mexico border. In its early years, the bank concentrated on funding water and wastewater projects in colonias, often serving as a source of leveraging other financing.
As also we've been called the funding of last resort. You know, you, that when a project doesn't quite have all of its finances together at, say, at a water utility, and they need that last piece, they can come to us and we'll work with them. We do have grant funds as well as low interest loan funds to provide them resources to get the water and wastewater infrastructure into the colonias.
By early 2002, the NADBANK had authorized spending about $379 million from its funds to help finance 43 projects in Mexico and the United States. Stormont says the bank has also expanded its original mandate and is funding other needs stemming from the proliferation of colonias.
We have several projects, one in Agua Prieta, Sonora, Ciudad Juarez, Chihuahua, two projects that are going to be targeting lower income, poor colonial-like situations on the Mexican side of the border where they don't have adequate paving. They don't have any paving. And so the dust is a huge public health problem, as well as it's a huge contributor to the overall air quality non-attainment issues on both sides of the border.
Accidents of geography, economics, and history are encouraging some border communities to cooperate. Here in the twin cities of Nogales, Sonora, and Nogales, Arizona, the daily train rattles residents on both sides of the border as it ships goods from Mexico to the United States. Like Ciudad Juarez, Nogales hillsides are sculpted with colonias. And on the United States side, the federal government has declared Nogales, Arizona, a colonia eligible for additional federal funding. Connecting the sister cities is a storm drain tunnel.
It's not a sewer tunnel, although there is a lot of runoff from outhouses and shanty towns and stuff like that, so the water is dangerous. Plus, there's runoff from the maquiladoras. The water in the tunnel supposedly has heavy metals and toxics in it. There's been spills of gasoline into it. It caught fire on the Mexican side a few years ago.
Miriam Davidson is the author of a book about the two Nogales titled Lives on the Line.
But there is also a separate sewer line that runs south to north across the border, because all of the effluent from Mexico is treated at a sewer plant that's about 8 miles north of the border. And then the water is released and flows, continues to flow north to Tucson. So the two sides have this complicated history of cooperation on the environment because of the way the land slopes here, downhill from the Mexican side to the U.S. side. And so it's required them, and also the many hills in the area, it's just made it very complicated for them in terms of water and wastewater systems. So they've had to work very closely together, and that has helped them in terms of dealing with other issues in a cooperative way.
Despite examples of bilateral cooperation in Nogales and other places, rapid population growth and commerce along the U.S.-Mexico border, have outpaced infrastructure investments. No Marshall Plan for the Colonias and adjoining areas exists. The North American Development Bank estimates that almost $2 billion will have to be spent during the next 3 years just to keep up with border infrastructure needs. Whether Mexico and the United States will be able to meet the challenge at a time of austere budgets is a question with deep implications for millions of border residents. For Common Ground, I'm Kent Patterson reporting.